These days, media reports about some sort of new deadly bacteria appear with seemingly more regularity. We've all seen it. The doomsday headline about some bacterial infection somewhere that has no cure or is resistant to antibiotics, or worse, it eats your flesh. But has there really been a spike in these so-called superbugs, or is this just the media's way of getting you to turn the page or stay through the commercial break? Well, here to help sort this all out, MSU molecular biologist Shannon Manning. Dr. Manning played a crucial role in helping to solve the mystery behind one of the most deadly E. coli outbreaks ever, which killed more than 50 people and sickened nearly 4,000 in Germany 2 years ago. She's also a featured lecturer in MSU's Classes Without Quizzes, which we're going to learn about in just a few minutes. That's hosted by the College of Natural Science. Welcome, Shannon. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. You too.
So we keep hearing about all these super bugs these days, antibiotic-resistant bacteria that shut down your heart or ruin your digestive tract. Is this really a phenomenon? Are there more dangerous drug-resistant bacteria emerging? Or is this overreaction by folks like us in the media who are just looking to keep people from changing channels?
Well, I do think that we are seeing the emergence of many new infections, but each time we see a new infection emerge, we actually learn a lot about those infections. So I'm not sure that we should be scared. We should probably be cautious and be educated, particularly if a given infection is in a food source that you eat frequently.
Part of this seems to be that bacteria, correct me if I'm wrong, but are bacteria evolving? I do hear about that. I do read about that. Is that at the heart of this?
They are. Microbes are everywhere, and they're constantly changing. And so this is kind of the basis for the flu vaccine that we get every year. And this is the reason why we have to change it, because the influenza virus evolves. And so that's true for bacteria as well. And so bacteria mutate, but they also acquire DNA from different species. And so sometimes they can acquire plasmids or other types of DNA elements that might make them resistant to the drugs that we're using to treat them. And in some cases, they can acquire DNA that will make them more virulent.
They acquire DNA.
Right. Okay. They do this naturally in the environment.
And that is at the heart of this process.
Yes.
You played a role in one example where drug-resistant bacteria was causing a great deal of fear across Europe. We don't want to make too light of this. The 2011 outbreak in Germany. This was a strain of E. coli that killed more than 50 people and sickened nearly 4,000. Tell us about that.
Okay. So the organism produces a toxin. It's called the Shiga toxin. And after it attaches to the intestines, it produces the toxin that enters the bloodstream and travels to the kidney, where it causes damage. And it can cause kidney failure and death in many. And so different organisms have kind of different abilities to produce this toxin. And so what we found for this organism after I received it at MSU was that it actually forms a biofilm in the intestines. And what that means is it's a bunch of bacteria that kind of clump together, and they form a protective coating. They secrete a substance, and that it actually encases them. And this protects them from external stresses and antibiotics and such, anything that we would throw at them. But while they're actually surviving within this biofilm, we found that they're producing more toxin. Ugh. And so the extra toxin production is what we think is responsible for causing the kidney failure and the high frequencies that we saw during this outbreak.
So the evolution of this biofilm is definitely a challenge for health officials, correct? Because this is what's making it more resistant.
Right. And so this, yes, biofilms are naturally resistant to antibiotics as well. But the organism also has other DNA elements that it acquired from other bacteria that also facilitate antibiotic resistance. So it has kind of two different pieces to it.
That sounds fairly alarming.
It is.
There was a woman from Michigan who came back from visiting Germany and was severely ill, and I understand that's how you became involved. Tell us about that.
Yes, so I wasn't really involved in the outbreak investigations in Germany, but when I was here, I worked very closely with the Michigan Department of Community Health, and they alerted me that we had a case. And so we got the organism from them, and we did some tests, and that was what we found. We found that the organism produces this biofilm that makes it kind of safe within the host and produces more toxin.
And that discovery was made here at Michigan State?
Yes.
That's what you're saying? You had journalists from all over the world calling you. What was that experience like? What did they want to know?
Well, that was interesting. I think most of them wanted me to create panic, but I don't actually think that's true. I mean, they were kind of alarmed because what happened is this was unique in that they sequenced the genome of the bacterium of the E. coli while the outbreak was actually going on. And this was highly unusual. And so they did this in 3 days. And so it provided everyone with a lot of information right away. And so, you know, scientists were looking at the genome and they were saying, oh, this bacterium has a lot of characteristics that we've never seen previously. We should be alarmed. But actually what happened is the genome provided a very useful tool for diagnostics. And so many individuals went through the genome, found unique portions that then they could use to screen food sources in Germany and identify patients more rapidly. And so it facilitated more rapid detection of the organism and eventually led to the discovery of fenugreek seeds as the culprit.
Was the genome sequence unraveled here at Michigan State, or did that take place elsewhere?
That took place in China.
Okay.
Somebody sent the DNA from a patient that they isolated from a patient to China, and they did that there. But we were one of the first here at Michigan State to actually get the strain to work on. And, you know, I was just lucky enough to have it fall into my lap. And so we just started working on it immediately to try to figure out whether it was more virulent than we've seen previously, or whether, I mean, another hypothesis was that maybe the patients or the people who were getting sick in Germany had a higher density of organisms on the foods that they were eating.
It's an important line of work you're in, but it's also so interesting because it obviously it's changing all the time.
It is.
That is just
me in business.
It's an amazing an amazing topic. You're involved in a project as well called Classes Without Quizzes. Tell us about that.
I am. It's actually an interesting project. It's a few days of work. They have a bunch of lectures conducted by myself and other researchers at MSU. And so it's a really great way for alumni and other people who are affiliated with MSU to come and hear about what's going on at MSU.
This is science related, or
science
does it get
related
outside of science? It's all science. Okay.
It is. It's through the College of Natural Science.
Okay. Dr. Shannon Manning is an MSU molecular biologist. She'll be featured lecturer as part of MSU's Classes Without Quizzes, which is a chance for the public to engage with MSU researchers. Classes Without Quizzes will be held Saturday, April 13th, but registration is required. For more information and to register, you can go to NS, for natural science, ns.msu.edu. Dr. Shannon Manning, thank you and good luck.
Thank you for having me.